Well, this is Phil Davidson, and with me today is General John Borling, who will be participating in the RSO's Classics 2 concert on Saturday, November 10th, 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. Thank you for being here today, General Borling.
Well, glad to be with you, and we want lots of people to come out for this event, which, as you know, is just the night before Veterans Day.
Right. Perfect timing. So, the Old War Poems composition is the centerpiece of the concert, literally the centerpiece, because it's sandwiched between Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, which
wonderful,
is a wonderful,
wonderful
piece of music, yeah. And Haydn's Mass in Time of War.
And that's going to be with the full chorale, too. That's in the second
fantastic.
Part.
Yeah. The composer of Old War Poems is Michael Cunningham, who, by the way, is very much alive.
He certainly is. He's an old friend and goes back many years, our relationship. Very talented jazz musician, composer, obviously, in his own right. Widely experienced with a variety of musical ensembles and orchestras and things, but an amazing talent.
And he's living right over there in Indiana near Chicago.
He does, although he's spending most of his time now in North Carolina. His 94-year-old mother is in North Carolina. She's a World War II vet.
Oh, my.
And there's stories to tell there. She'll be with us.
Oh,
an irrepressible lady. She was a wave.
Uh-huh.
And Michael's very dedicated and devoted to her and to his music. And he's an accountant besides, does tax work for major clients around the country.
So he's a busy guy.
Busy guy.
Now, I believe you were part of the development and an earlier performance of this piece. So how so? Can you
Well,
that?
Michael has been working on a Civil War suite, if you will, for a long period of time, almost 10 years, and he wanted to publish something coincident with the sesquicentennial, the 150-year anniversary of the conclusion of the Civil War. And in fact, he had begun composing and then became enamored of the Whitman poems, and that became kind of the muse that talked to him that completed the first part of the suite. And he asked me to do the narration of what turned out to be four poems. And we went back and forth with where they fit and how they fit and what they should do. And then created a CD that was the project, I guess would be the best word, for a Memorial Day celebration at the Logan statue in Chicago. You are familiar with General mm-hmm. John Logan, who was an Illinois general who created Memorial Day. And that two-piano version of what is titled Old War Poems was provided to the people who were at that ceremony at the statue on Memorial Day 2016, but always with the hope that it would be able to grow into a full orchestral version, and this is going to be the world premiere, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. And that's what I was going to mention, that it did actually, its first performance was with strictly two pianos rather than an orchestra.
It was, yes. And and that CD, limited edition CD by the Chicago Cultural Mile, I'm listed as the executive producer on it. I was never an executive producer of a CD before, but my friend and Commercial Club colleague J.R. Davis and the Chicago Cultural Mile underwrote the necessary cost to make that happen. Well, if you're nice to me, I'll give you a copy here.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Podcast.
Thank you very much. Yeah, don't charge me too much.
No, I won't charge you anything.
That's the best price there is.
It's your honorarium for this podcast.
Thank you very much. So we will. This is amazing. We're going to be witnessing a world premiere. I mean, that does not happen that often in Rockford.
Well, I think Steve Larson deserves a lot of credit, and the Rockford Symphony. You know, the Lincoln Academy was here in May, and we had two world premieres. One by Steve himself, which is entitled "Shall Long Endure." It's a mm-hmm. processional, and then Emily Bear had "And Forever Free," a kind of a celebration of the American spirit. Again, full orchestral suites in both cases. And so now we're back. That was May. Now we're back in November, and I know that Steve and Mike have been working closely for an extended period of time on the score and working through it, and it's just up to me not to screw up the narration.
I have no fear of that.
As properly anticipatory to be using a proper word, I'll have a fair amount of stage fright because that's how you get your juices working.
Yes, absolutely.
Frankly,
yep, that's right. Well, now going back to Michael Cunningham, and you've already alluded to this already, but tell us who and what inspired him to write old war poems.
Well, again, he's very original and artistic. He's not just a performer. He's a composer, conductor in his own right. I know that he was influenced by the Civil War documentary by Ken Burns. Mm-hmm. He certainly was inspired by a Civil War, and I'm not going to get the title right, but Minstrel Boy Gone to War, theme that was popular, and started to work through this and then became aware of Walt Whitman's unusual contributions during the Civil War. Are you familiar with what Whitman did?
Mm-hmm. I am. I read up on that. Yes.
Oh, did you? Okay. Well, perhaps our listeners are not so advantaged. And Whitman, who was working as kind of a corpsman in hospital, would see these guys come in wounded, and Civil War medicine was terrible. Normally, if you got wounded, you died. This was our most gruesome war in terms of combat deaths. On both sides, it was some 625,000 or so that died. In fact, there was more American deaths in the Civil War than in all the other wars that we participated in the course mm-hmm. of our history. Mm-hmm. But Whitman would be, because many of the soldiers were illiterate, would be writing home kind of the last letter to family members. And Mike read about all this and then started researching some of the poems and was impelled to finish this suite. I'm calling it a suite. It's about 23 minutes of music. It's longer than the Copeland piece about Lincoln. It has more verbiage in it, and we then he and I went through and picked out some poems. But I'm not going to make myself center stage on any of this. I was an assistant too, and this is Mike Cunningham's piece. I'm just pleased to be a small part of it.
And we're glad you're going to be a part of it too. So, I mean, he was influenced by Aaron Copland as well then.
Absolutely. He was. Who isn't influenced by Aaron Copland?
Oh, he's
amazing. And I would say John Williams, for example, and others. Mike has got a very diverse musical background, classically trained, obviously, but his jazz predilection mm-hmm. comes out. And he wanted to capture in old war poems a thematic that starts from the war being fought, if you will, adieu to a soldier, to a kind of a Civil War PTSD, the war dreams mm-hmm. thing, and then going on to the quasi-victory parade at the end. And then I did suggest that we add a fourth poem, which is right at the end, that talks to the legacy that Lincoln left the nation. And that will conclude the 23-minute piece. On the CD, there's an additional piece. We used Dave Onderdonk from Interlochen, jazz guitarist, to do variations of Shenandoah, and I did a further narration, Visual Strange, I kept on a field one night, another Whitman poem to round out the CD. That currently is not planned on the program, so we'll just make scant mention of it here.
As a veteran, what makes these poems and, in fact, the entire musical composition so meaningful to you?
I think you almost have to have been in combat to appreciate mm-hmm. the observation I'm going to make, and that is you get very close to the arts when you're involved in such a circumstance. You may know that I was a POW in Vietnam, and I wrote a book of poetry in my mind. But music and expression, the human ability to create, becomes very important to you somehow, even though you're slogging it out in daily or almost daily combat in the air, since we flew missions on a daily basis north. And there was that sense that somehow you could retain your humanity if you had that essence of creation. Because war is an unnatural circumstance. It seems so natural. We seem to be in them so routinely and so long. But the philosophical musing I would offer is that there's a natural reaching out for an appreciation for things that are beautiful. You know, in the Civil War and World War I, there were cases where the front lines were so close together that there would be interchanges. In fact, the soldiers would sing one to another across the battlefield and then go try to kill each other the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I also am a veteran, but I was not in combat, so
well,
I can't begin to know
but
what
veteran,
it's like.
Veterans share a special bond. I mean, you signed up to support the flag, and that means a lot. There's about 25 million veterans, and if you think about an extended family and how many Americans are specifically touched, I mentioned this again with Veterans Day upon us, Armistice Day. This is the 100th anniversary of the conclusion of World War I. That war that never should have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know why it happened?
Educate me.
They failed to use the telephone. None of the diplomats wanted the war, but they were going through the protocol of exchanging notes, and events began to control events. Mobilization, if you will, occurred. And once Russia, as it turned out, mobilized, and Germany had to respond, everyone had to respond, and in those days, once you mobilized, you were going. And everyone understood they were going for the wrong reason, some screwy little thing that happened down in the Balkans, which is...
Yeah.
And yet, the millions slaughtered in World War I and the aftermath of a horrific century of warfare, and it continues today. It was Plato who was attributed with the phrase, "Only the dead have seen the end of war." God, I wish it were not so, but I fear that I fear that human nature hasn't changed very much over the years, and we react viscerally as people and nations to perceived threat, to fear, to hate, to religious differences. And in old war poems, you will see this angst. You will see this, and it's the audience is going to have to work. They're going to have to work. They'll have the poems in front of them, and I'll do my best to create this mood. And Michael said, remember, when you're speaking, it's not the orchestra that's up, it's you. So he's put the pressure on my shoulders here. But the music itself is pervasive of the Civil War experience, but for that matter, all combat. I don't mean to wax long and lyrical on this, but I think it's deserving.
Absolutely. Well, it took Cunningham 10 years, I believe, to write this composition.
He worked on it off and on over that time frame.
It sounds like a massive undertaking. Can you give us any idea as to the process that he went through particularly to coordinate and intertwine the music with the poems?
Yeah, I do know that. He had written the first quarter, perhaps, of old war poems without really knowing about the Whitman influence. And then, as I mentioned, it was the Whitman research and sense that this could be a lot more that impelled him to finish the rest, and he wanted to finish it by the 150th anniversary and came close. And then economics drove that it be a two-piano version, and Marudgwa Darja, I almost have that right, a Mongolian classic pianist, was the pianist who played both parts, over which then we recorded the poems. And I get the sense that where certain music thrills, like the hymn to the Common Man, I mean, you're just awed by the beauty of it, that this is going to be a much more contemplative piece, a much more reflective piece that, again, takes you through and focuses on that four-year period where there is so much carnage and there is so much stress to the nation that it's almost a miracle that we came out the other end and then were able to go on as a people. It seems like every generation we try to tear the place apart, like ripping up the street for one reason or another internally. And then somehow the American spirit prevails and we kind of come out the other end waiting for the next moment of divisiveness to hit us. In the end, I have great confidence in the reasoning power and the pragmatic sense of the American people. I think we're not so much, except for those folks who are out there on the edges, ideologues as much as we are pragmatists, and we believe, you know, we just like to be left alone to live our lives in a responsible manner and be respectful one to another.
I'm
making a lecture here out of this.
That's okay. Is that lectures all right? are good. It's a very interesting lecture. What will the audience know or notice about this piece that is extraordinary, thrilling?
That goes back to my earlier comment. I think they're going to come away with what I would hope would be a quiet contemplation. I think that there will be an emotion that will come out that will they're going to want to recognize what Michael has done and that it is a world premiere. And again, my job is strictly to help it along in a few moments of recitation. But I guess I'd like them to have an appreciation for what it has taken for us to continue on as a going concern, if you will, as a nation. And I think that is thrilling in its own right, because so far we've beaten the odds of history. I mean, we're only 240 years old, but we're 240 years old of a practicing republic/democracy that continues to hold sway in the world. And that's the chore that every generation has to follow and to see as a kind of a beacon in the night. And maybe that's what I would suggest as a metaphor, that the old war poems represents that light out there in the darkness, that beacon in the night that keeps us marching as a people, as a nation, so that future generations can take advantage of the sacrifices of the past, be prepared for sacrifices of the future, but also the glories of being an American.
Well, I think everyone should come and see that beacon. Don't miss this.
November 10th, 7:30.
Right, at the Coronado Performing Arts Center with a fantastic orchestra and a great person, General John Borland.
Oh, that's oversell, but it's going to be a special night of music. And again, historically sensitive, maybe we should finish with this theme we were talking about, marching forward. Yes, it is the 100th anniversary of Veterans Day. It's the 150th anniversary of Memorial Day, which was done in 1868 by General Logan. It is the 200th anniversary of Illinois itself. It seems like there's the stars are congruent with respect to astrological significance. Mm-hmm. And I think this event on November 10th is going to be an event that we'll all remember.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
This is Phil Davidson.
And John Borling.
Thank you for listening.